Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 611, titled Update on 9/11 and Related Matters, subtitled Caution, Networks at Work. This program is being recorded on September 23rd of the year 2007. As the name of the broadcast implies, what we're doing is to update our ongoing and years-long investigation of September 11th and related matters. And those related matters, by the way, are enormous and far-reaching. And in turn, what we're doing is taking a look at some of the ongoing operations of networks, criminal networks, commercial networks, both of them with political connections that are very profound, and both the overtly and primarily criminal networks and the commercial networks engaged in some truly criminal activities, and sadly because of the tremendous political power that is derivative of their economic power, these networks have gone untouched, and the sorts of outgrowths of their activities that we saw on September 11th could very easily transpire at any time because the networks are operational and the investigations into them, the investigations into the activities that truly lay behind what we saw on September 11th, well, those investigations have to date been unsatisfactory or in some cases completely ridiculous. What we're going to look at now concerns some of the networking, and again, there's that word. I don't like the term conspiracy theory because what we're really looking at is networking, something powerful people engage in. In fact, not so powerful people engage in, and it's really these networks at work that we need to be cautious about. And we're going to begin by taking a look at an article from the Wall Street Journal of August 29th of 2007. This article is authored by Glenn Simpson, and it's headlined, How UN Sanctions Fail to Contain Saudi Mogul. Now, the Saudi mogul here is a fellow named Yassin Qadhi. Yassin Qadhi's activities, among other things, founded or helped to fund and also found the PTEC company. PTEC is a software company from Massachusetts that developed the threat assessment software architecture for the Federal Aviation Administration, NORAD, and the United States Air Force, among other agencies. And its funders, in addition to Yassin al-Qadhi, are people associated with the Muslim Brotherhood, al-Qaeda, the first World Trade Center attack from 1993, and, generally speaking, people that you would not want to be funding a company that was developing software architecture to assess threats for the Air Force and the FAA and NORAD. One of the directors of PTEC, by the way, is a fellow named Yaqub Mirza. It was Yaqub Mirza who set up the institutions that were raided on March 20th of 2002 as part of the Operation Green Quest raids targeting a series of individuals and institutions whose activities embrace not only the Bush administration and elements of the GOP, but also the Muslim Brotherhood, al-Qaeda, and network elements running back to the Third Reich. So that's who Yassin Qadhi is, and among the places in which he has been active is Turkey. And among the people with whom he has been active is Prime Minister Recep Erdogan of Turkey. Now, interestingly, Erdogan's mentor, Nekmetin Erbakan, and I may not be pronouncing these right, the current prime minister of Turkey is Erdogan, E-R-D-O-G-A-N. The name of his predecessor and mentor is Erbakan, E-R-B-A-K-A-N. Now, we're going to be talking about both men, so remember, Erbakan, E-R-B-A-K-A-N, is the older prime minister and the mentor of Mr. Erdogan, who is the current prime minister. Mr. Erbakan, the ex-prime minister, is an associate of Ahmed Huber of the Bank al-Taqwa, whom, among other things, made an introduction of Erbakan to Jean-Marie Le Pen, the French fascist leader. And we're going to be taking a look at the networking between Erdogan, the protege of Erbakan, who's an associate of Ahmed Huber, and Yassin al-Qadhi, one of the financiers not only apparently of al-Qaeda through, among other institutions, the Muwafaq Foundation, but also of the PTEC company as well. Again, Wall Street Journal, August 29th of 2007, How UN Sanctions Fail to Contain Saudi Mogul. This is authored by Glenn Simpson of the Wall Street Journal. Yasin Qadhi is a well-known multimillionaire, founder of a large supermarket chain here, and a close friend of the Turkish premier. "I trust him the same way I trust my father," unquote, Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan said on national television last year. But the Saudi businessman also is a major financier of Islamic terrorism with close business associates who are members of Al-Qaeda, according to the U.S. Treasury and the United Nations Security Council. At Washington's request, the Security Council ordered Mr. Qadhi's assets frozen a few weeks after the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks in the United States. The asset freeze has largely crippled Mr. Qadhi's international business empire, but previously undisclosed records show he has managed to free up millions of dollars of holdings in Turkey in apparent violation of the Security Council sanctions and without incurring punishment by Turkish authorities. The case of Mr. Qadhi shows the challenges Washington faces in separating friend from foe in the Islamic world. The records detailing his business activities also suggest how easy it can be to skirt sanctions designed to restrict funding of terrorism, especially for well-connected figures. Mr. Qadhi's friendship with the Prime Minister also plays into the growing debate in Turkey over the role of Islam in a secular society. Turkey's parliament for the first time Tuesday elected a politician with an Islamist background, Foreign Minister Abdullah Gül, to the presidency. Immediately after being sworn in, Mr. Gül pledged impartiality, saying, quote, "Secularism, one of the main principles of our republic, is a precondition for social peace," unquote. But the development, nonetheless, has heightened concern about the direction this pivotal nation, poised between East and West, is taking. By the way, Mr. Gül has also shown a fair amount of partiality in the direction of an organization called Milli Görüş, which German authorities have identified as an Al-Qaeda / Al-Taqwa associate, very active within and active on behalf of Muslim Brotherhood-connected elements within the Turkish population within Germany proper. Skipping down of the Justice and Development Party of Mr. Erdogan. Since coming to power in 2002, the Justice and Development Party has run one of the most pro-Western governments to rule Turkey. It has encouraged a Western-style market economy and made painful overhauls in a bid to join the European Union. The party just won an overwhelming new mandate in parliamentary elections, but tensions are likely to persist. U.S. diplomats lodged strong objections last year when the Erdogan government intervened in Turkish courts to try to lift the freeze on Mr. Qadhi's Turkish assets, according to U.S. officials. The Turkish government reversed course. And skipping down still again, Mr. Qadhi, whose business empire is based mostly in Saudi Arabia, is a longtime partner of Turkish businessman Cüneyt Zapsu, as well as other key Justice and Development Party figures. Over the past year, Turkish media and opposition leaders have disclosed that Turkey's financial police investigated the activities of Mr. Qadhi and alleged Al-Qaeda supporters in Turkey. That led them to delve into the relationships of Mr. Qadhi and other Saudis with senior justice and development figures, including Mr. Erdogan himself. Among Mr. Qadhi's largest Turkish investments is the discount supermarket chain BIM, one of Turkey's biggest companies with more than 1,500 outlets and annual sales of about $1.5 billion. BIM, which trades on the Istanbul Stock Exchange, is a discounter modeled in part on Walmart and other low-price chains. Mr. Zapsu also was among BIM's founding partners. Mr. Zapsu, who in 2001 helped Mr. Erdogan found the Justice and Development Party, also supported an Islamic charity Mr. Qadhi founded that is at the center of the U.S. and Security Council decision to freeze the Saudi businessman's assets. A Turkish financial police report seen by the Wall Street Journal found that in the 1990s, Mr. Zapsu and his mother gave $300,000 to Mr. Qadhi's Muwafaq charity, which U.S. officials labeled a front for Al-Qaeda shortly after September 11th. Central Intelligence Agency reports say Muwafaq, now defunct, specialized in purchasing and smuggling arms for Islamic radicals. The U.S. Government Special Commission on the September 11, 2001 attack and law enforcement agencies have cited Saudi-backed Islamic charities as primary sources of funding for Al-Qaeda. Mr. Zapsu also has business ties to two Islamic banks funded with Saudi capital, Dala al-Baraka and Dar al-Mal al-Islam, that were accused of supporting al-Qaeda in civil suits filed by families of September 11th victims in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York. Both defendants adamantly deny the allegations, and the court dismissed claims against al-Baraka. One of the things that's worth noting here, again, is that although to date the authorities in Turkey and elsewhere have been unwilling for whatever reason to pursue these allegations past a point, note that one of the things that makes a lot of these things sticky is that many of these charities that also double as Islamic terror funding conduits also are charities that do some very real and, in that context, laudable work, at the same time as these are Janus-faced organizations that also serve as terrorist funding conduits, which makes things difficult. Plus, what is even more, basically one of the things that obstructs these investigations still more, is the fact that many of the people involved in the financing or alleged financing, such as Mr. Al-Qadi, are very prestigious figures in Saudi Arabia and also major investors in not only Saudi Arabia, but in Western companies, including media companies, various other enterprises as well. Now, as discussed in, among other programs, For the Record 455, the mentor of Mr. Erdogan, who is tied in to Yassin al-Qadi, the mentor of Mr. Erdogan, Nekmetin Erbakan, was an associate of Ahmed Huber of Bank al-Taqwa. And the following statement was a statement made by the mentor of the current Turkish prime minister. The following is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, September 13th of 2007. This is an op-ed column about the resurgence of anti-Semitism. It's by Victor Davis Hansen. It's headlined, "Looking for a Scapegoat," and the first of a number of remarkable quotes here. Remarkable in that these are extremely venally anti-Semitic quotes, but by very prestigious people making these statements public. And the first of these is by the former Prime Minister of Turkey and the mentor of the current Prime Minister of Turkey, Nekmetin Erbakan. Victor Davis Hansen writes, who recently said, "These Jews started 19 crusades. The 19th was World War I. Why? Only to build Israel," unquote. Did some holdover Nazi say this? Hardly. It was former Prime Minister Nekmetin Erbakan of Turkey, a NATO ally. He went on to claim that the Jews, whom he refers to as bacteria, unquote, controlled China, India, and Japan and ran the United States. Who alleged, quote, the Arabs who were involved in 9/11 cooperated with the Zionists, actually. It was a cooperation. They gave them the perfect excuse to denounce all Arabs, unquote. A conspiracy nut? No, it was actually Democratic U.S. Senator James Aberesk of South Dakota. He denounced Israel on a Hezbollah-owned television station, adding, quote, I marveled at the Hezbollah resistance to Israel. It was a marvel of organization, of courage, and bravery. So that, by the way, is Arab-American former United States Senator James Aberesk, who at one point was very much involved with the Bureau of Indian Affairs and with administering Indian affairs in the United States and had much to do with helping to further some of the many scandals that embraced some of the federal administration, some of the federal agencies that were administering Native American affairs. Now, there are a number of evidentiary tributaries involving things Turkish or related to Turkey, related to September 11th. There's certainly, although Turkey is a constitutionally secular Islamic country, there certainly are some elements within its power structure that are pro-Islamist, pro-Al-Qaeda, and linked to the Bank al-Taqwa. In the article that we're about to read, it is alleged by Daniel Hopsiger that a Turkish naval attaché in the United States is involved with a company that Muhammad Atta headed and a company that has been alleged by investigators to be not only involved in illicit activities, but illicit activities including perhaps automobile smuggling that were used to finance al-Qaeda. Now, of course, all the people involved here deny these allegations. The following article is titled Muhammad Atta, Florida Entrepreneur. It's by Daniel Hopsicker, published in the Mad Cow Morning News of June 12, 2007, and it reads in part, Government records in Florida reveal that Muhammad Atta was the president of a company in Orlando with a business partner whose web of dummy shell companies appear characteristic of the type used in terrorist financing and illicit money laundering, the Mad Cow Morning News has learned. One day after the 9/11 Commission report says the terrorist ringleader finished making withdrawals in Virginia Beach, Virginia, totaling $18,000 from a SunTrust bank account, on April 5, 2001, Hassan Erudani, an Orlando man with close ties to the Moroccan embassy in Washington, D.C., filed incorporation papers with the state of Florida listing the president of KARAM LLC as Muhammad Atta. Incorporation documents give the names of the KARAM LLC's officers as Hassan Erudani himself, Muhammad Atta, and Jamal Erudani. KARAM LLC was delisted in 2002 by the state of Florida for failing to file an annual report. When the firm filed for reinstatement on January 13th of 2003, it once again listed Muhammad Atta as a corporate officer. But Atta had now been demoted to company secretary. Of course, in real life, Muhammad Atta had ascended and was enjoying his 70 high-bosomed, black-eyed virgins and attendant mysteries up in heaven, according to report. Continuing, and his address has changed as well. Not to Paradise or Virgin City, but Orlando, a long way from heaven, according to those who've been there. Atta's current address, if Florida Division of Corporate Records can be believed, is 4124 West Colonial Drive, Orlando, Florida, the location of an international house of pancakes. Of course, before we continue with the article, this raises questions, of course, as to what Muhammad Atta they're talking about, and is this just a name that has been used for various people at the operational level in some of these activities, including not just piloting the plane that ran into the World Trade Center, but perhaps God knows what else, including perhaps some ongoing activities as well. So, who exactly is using that name is one of the questions this article suggests. I don't have an answer. But certainly, this is an interesting company, and we're going to read more about it. Hassan Erudani has close ties with the Moroccan embassy in Washington, D.C. He's also the president of the Moroccan American Chamber of Commerce. Florida records show Erudani is also business partners in a company called JMH Investment Group with Mohamed Ariad, the economic counselor of the Moroccan embassy in Washington, D.C. Atta was, of course, in Orlando on numerous occasions. For example, his car, a red 1989 Pontiac Grand Prix two-door coupe, was said to have been last seen in downtown Orlando. Still, the idea that the Muhammad Atta, unquote, who flew Flight 11 into the Twin Towers on September 11, 2001, had been listed as a corporate officer in a Florida company without it having become public knowledge by now seemed a tad unlikely, perhaps even a little bit far-fetched. At least it did until after we spoke with KARAM LLC principal and founder Hassan Erudani, whom we reached by phone at his Orlando home. We hadn't counted on either Erudani's flat refusal to answer any questions about the Muhammad Atta listed as an officer in his company or his tone of evident hostility. Trust us, we'd been nothing if not polite, even to the point of suggesting a reason for the whole thing might have just been a big misunderstanding. Was it perhaps just a case of two different men with similar names, we asked helpfully? Erudani's forceful response was, I don't have anything to say about that, unquote, and then he hung up. Why would someone do that unless they possess what is commonly known as guilty knowledge? His behavior seemed both inexplicable and suspicious. Among the red flags denoting Hassan Erudani's various enterprises, which we never got the opportunity to question about, one, he ran a wire transfer service called Rapid Cash from out of his home. Atta and Marwan made frequent use of wire services to get money. He owned a company, SeaWest Car Import Export, which appears to be in the business of exporting luxury vehicles to the Middle East. One of the corporate officers in SeaWest until recently was Murat Oner, unquote. Lieutenant Commander Murat Oner is the Turkish Embassy's naval attaché in Washington. Recall whistleblower Sibel Edmonds' long and courageous struggle to tell America what she knows about, among other things, Turkish influence in the international drug trade and its relationship to terrorism. Other companies possibly related to the Karam LLC scheme include Karam Motors, another company which ships cars to Lebanon. Florida records show it was incorporated the same day that Karam LLC filed for reinstatement on January 13th of 2003. Another Orlando company, Karam Moving and Storage, gave as its address a private home located two blocks south of the Orlando Executive Airport, the same airport where Terror Flight School owner Wally Hilliard's Learjet was confiscated with 43 pounds of heroin on board 6 months earlier. And so, again, a number of interesting people involved with a very interesting company indeed, involved with shipping automobiles to the Middle East, possibly with more than that. And, by the way, automobile smuggling has been a major source of terror financing over the years. That company lists one Mohammed Atta as a corporate officer in various capacities. So who exactly was that Mohammed Atta? Now, among the many associates of Mohammed Atta in Florida, obviously a whole lot more going on down there than just fundamentalist Islam, but among the associates of Mohammed Atta was Wolfgang Boringer, a German national, fiercely anti-American, fiercely anti-Semitic, and a member of the Flying Club of Munich, headed up by his father, who also was the head of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Germany. Now, in the book The Nazis Go Underground from 1944, authored by anti-fascist writer Kurt Ries and available on the Spitfire website for download for free, there's discussion of the Nazis' plans to execute an underground perpetuation of the Third Reich, and one of the things that they chose to do is to use various sects and religious groups, which for one reason or another were available for their utilization in that capacity. One of the many religious groups which was available in that capacity was the very tiny Seventh-day Adventist Church in Germany, because the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Germany collaborated with the Third Reich, and there is substantive evidence that that church was then, in the post-war period, at least in the early part, a repository for unreconstructed Nazis. What we're going to conclude the program with is some excerpts of a paper called The Seventh-day Adventists by Corey Schroeder. This is available on the University of California at Santa Barbara Oral History Project homepage. And of the Seventh-day Adventists in Germany, of the collaboration between the German Seventh-day Adventist Church and Nazi Germany, we read, "Nazi Germany was a horrible place for small denominational churches because there was no religious liberty. One small denomination that did survive was the Seventh-day Adventist denomination. When Adolf Hitler rose to power in Germany, the German Seventh-day Adventist denomination, hereafter referred to as Adventists, believed it was time for a strong leader in Germany. Hitler seemed to be the best candidate because of, quote, his personal dedication and his abstinence from tea, coffee, alcohol, and meat, practices shared by the Adventists. Therefore, he was welcomed as a savior," unquote. I hope to point out, because of the willingness to compromise of the... Beginning again. I hope to point out, because of their willingness to compromise the decent of the German Adventist denomination from the moral issues listed below to where they ended at the end of World War II. They ended in compromise, loss of personal integrity and denominational integrity, splitting the denomination, and they were racially damaged as a Christian organization because they were unable to hold fast to the tenets of their beliefs. They tied the denomination to the German state, giving up their religious freedom in an attempt to survive through compromise. This position of compromise brought shame upon the German denomination as well as the worldwide denomination after the end of World War II. And what the program talks about is the fact that in order to survive the severe repression of small religions in Germany, ultimately the Seventh-day Adventists collaborated and were able to maintain some of their projects, basically, because of that. And one of the things that basically enabled the Seventh-day Adventists to perpetuate themselves was by collaborating with the Nazi church, with the Nazi government, and the welfare program that the Nazis maintained. The Seventh-day Adventist church actually had a fairly well-known and well-recognized welfare program. And because of that, it was able to be used by the Nazis as a front group, basically a PR front group in North America, particularly the United States, where the Seventh-day Adventists' support for the Nazi regime and their justifiably laudable welfare program were basically used as propaganda assets to make Nazi Germany look good in North America. But in fact, their social welfare program collaborated with the Nazi extermination and euthanasia programs of the poor, the weak, and the elderly, and the afflicted. Skipping down, the Adventists believed that along with their welfare program, their health ideals were leading the way for a new Germany. Adolf Mink, soon to be president of the German Adventist Church, said, quote, "We are not unprepared for the new order. After all, we have helped to prepare the way for it and helped to bring it about," unquote. The problem with supporting the Nazi government and their health program was the government's belief in the principles of Darwinism. The Adventist denominational stance was against Darwin's principles. The German Adventists sacrificed this principle for the Nazi government. In order to gain favor with the Nazi government, the Adventists changed what was written in their publications and reformed their health message. The Adventists frequently printed negative comments about the Jews. They also tried to show that even though the Adventist teachings about the Sabbath seemed Jewish, they were not Jews. The Adventists also believed in the sterilization program. Direct statements and the reprinting of non-Adventist articles show their support for sterilization. Skipping down, the mentally weak, schizophrenics, epileptics, blind, deaf, crippled, alcohols, drug addicts, all were to be sterilized, unquote. The position of the German Adventists changed from caritas, the caring for the less fortunate and weak, to elimination of the weak as the work of God. Their strong right arm had led German Adventists to a folkish position. And skipping down still later, of the German Seventh-day Adventist Church, again, whose head in the post-war period, as of this moment, is Wolfgang Barringer's father. Wolfgang Barringer is a close associate of Mohammed Atta, a member of the Flying Club of Munich, which appears to be a Nazi front organization, and Wolfgang Barringer also is the pilot, personal pilot for Viktor Kozeny, an associate of Semyon Mogilevich, whom we talked about early in the program. And skipping down, the German Adventists continued to support Hitler and his regime until the end of World War II. And skipping down in this article still further, only in May of 1948 did the General Conference take a closer look at the German Adventists' actions during the Nazi regime. The reason why the General Conference took interest was because of a letter written by Major J.C. Thompson, chief of the Religious Affairs Section of the American military government in Berlin. The letter wanted to know why the Adventists had not removed all the Nazis from their leadership positions within the denomination. So although some of them were purged, certainly at least going into the early post-war period, the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Germany, which had collaborated with the Nazis, was still to a certain extent a repository for unreconstructed Nazis. The reason we went into that is the head of the German Seventh-day Adventist Church at this time is Wolfgang Barringer's father. And Wolfgang Barringer, one of the close associates of Mohammed Atta in Venice, Florida, he's part of the network that helped to precipitate September 11th at the operational level. Do flesh out your understanding on these matters with the various pieces, sources of information available on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com and related websites. This, however, concludes Side 2 of For the Record 611, Update on 9/11, Caution Networks at Work. This is being recorded on September 23rd of the year 2007. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.